Jason tugged the brim of the borrowed hat down as far over his face as he could and started down the stairs at a normal pace, making the turn at the landing and clattering down to the corridor. Matt did the same. When they reached the bottom of the stairs, Jason and Matt found themselves in a corridor similar to the one above. The four doors, two on each side, had small barred windows. Obviously, prison cells. The presence of two men standing guard in the corridor told Jason that those cells were occupied.
What are you fellas doing here, Ford? I thought you and Fargo were posted out in the stable tonight.
Change of orders. We're taking over here.
Nobody told us. Hey, you ain't Ford and Fargo.
Jason brought the shotgun up and pointed the twin barrels at the guards.
Freeze!
At this range, if I pull these triggers, a buckshot will smear you boys all over the walls. Take your guns out slow and careful-like. Bend over, put them on the floor, and slide them over here.
The hell with you, mister. I don't know who you are, but if you pull those triggers, you'll have everybody else in the house down on you in about 5 seconds. Kill us, and you're dead too.
Yeah, well, that won't help you any, will it? I'm aiming right for your face, you son of a bitch. There won't be enough of your head left for your own mama to recognize you.
Jason! Matt! Oh, thank God!
Jenny!
Take him!
Jason knocked the closest guard off his feet. The second guard managed to get his gun out of its holster. Matt cracked the shotgun barrels across his gun hand, making the man drop the revolver. Jason brought the butt of his shotgun down hard against his opponent's jaw. Matt had a hand clamped around the second guard's throat to keep him from shouting a warning. He didn't see the man pull a knife and raise it high. Jason lunged. He grabbed the man's wrist and wrenched it to the side. Matt snatched up the revolver the outlaw had dropped. Matt pulled the gun back to hit the outlaw again.
Forget it. He's dead.
Matt blinked as he looked down at the outlaw's misshapen skull. Jason pushed himself to his feet, grabbed Matt's arm, and hauled him upright too. By now, the other three women were at the doors of their cells, peering out into the corridor like Jenny. Jason saw the relief on Megan's face and wanted to go to her, but there was no time. Someone was coming down the stairs, and there was no place to hide.
Stay here. Protect the women.
Then Jason ran toward the stairs. He took the steps two at a time, drawing his knife. He reached the landing at the same time as the man who was coming down, and as they suddenly faced each other, both of them froze for a second in surprise. Jason was shocked to find himself staring into the face of Flores, the man who had shot Wash Kehoe. Flores clawed for his gun. Jason stabbed him in the belly, and Flores fell forward. Jason and the dead man both wound up at the bottom of the stairs, tangled together. Jason shoved the corpse to the side and hurried back along the corridor to where Matt was bending over the bodies of the guards. He stood up, holding a ring of keys he had taken from one of the men.
One of these ought to open the locks.
He went to the door of Jenny's cell and began trying the keys in the padlock. While Matt was doing that, Jason hurried over to Megan's cell.
Are you all right?
I'm fine. None of us are hurt, just scared. They let us alone because Alba has plans to sell us to some Chinese warlords.
We overheard some of the outlaws talking and figured it was something like that. Thank God all of you are all right. Now we just have to get you out of here.
Did you and Matt come alone?
The two of us are the only ones who snuck into the house, but there are more men waiting outside. Isn't the key there?
I'll find it! I didn't think it would take this long. Ha!
It'll just be a few minutes and then we'll have you out of there, ladies.
Matt tossed the keys over to Jason. Jason caught them and began trying them in the lock on Megan's cell. He was luckier than Matt had been. The third key he inserted into the padlock opened it. He swung the door open, and Megan rushed out to throw herself into his arms. Jason hugged her tightly for a moment, burying his face in her thick hair. He then turned away from her and hurried across the corridor. Abigail's door was closer, so he went to work on it first, searching for the right key. While Jason was doing that, Megan picked up one of the revolvers that had been dropped by the dead guards. She averted her eyes from their corpses and stepped over to Matt and Jenny, who were still hugging each other.
Jenny, you better get one of those guns. We may have to shoot our way out of here.
Shoot?
Alba won't let you go without a fight. You've been through Indian battles before, Jenny. You'll be all right.
Jenny managed to nod. Megan picked up the other guard's revolver and pressed it into Jenny's hands. Jason finally got Abigail's door open.
Give me one of those shotguns. If any of those bastards gets in my way, he'll get a double load of buckshot.
Jason unlocked the door of Olympia's cell and gave her the other shotgun. With two greeners and four handguns, they made a pretty formidable group, at least under normal circumstances.
We need to find an out-of-the-way place to hide you women until the sun comes up. That's when the posse will be moving in. Matt and I have to figure out some way to distract Alba and his men when that happens.
Why don't you try to take Alba prisoner? His room is at the top of the tower.
Alba's probably got several bodyguards close by. We couldn't get to him without raising a ruckus, and that would alert the rest of the gang. We were mighty lucky to reach the four of you without having anyone spread the alarm.
Why don't the women wait right here? The guards probably won't be changed until morning, so no one will discover that they're free. And they can cover the bottom of these stairs with the guns they have, no problem. If anybody starts to come down and besides us, they can blast them.
That's a good idea. We'll drag these corpses all the way to the end of the hall where they can't be seen from that first landing.
The women turned their eyes away from the gruesome spectacle of Jason and Matt hauling the bodies of Flores and the two dead guards down to the far end of the corridor.
All of you, get in one of the cells. But first close all the other doors and hang the padlocks on the hasps so that they look like they're still fastened. Then, pull the door of the cell you're in almost closed. If you're quiet, you'll be able to hear if anyone starts down the stairs a long time before they get here.
Well, don't you worry about us, Marshal. Any of those bandits come anywhere near us, we'll blast them.
Jason hugged his sister and kissed her on the forehead. Then he turned to Megan and drew her into his embrace for a kiss on the mouth. A few feet away, Matt was bidding farewell to Jenny in similar fashion, leading Abigail to smile at Olympia.
I bet you wish your husband was here, hey, Mrs. Morelli?
No. I'm glad Michael's not here. He's a healer, not a fighter. I wouldn't want him getting hurt by those outlaws.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Everybody contributes in their own way.
Once the goodbyes had been said, Jason and Matt headed up the stairs while the women retreated into one of the cells. Both of the young men glanced back one last time before they went out of sight.
They'll be all right.
Of course they will.
They had to put any thoughts of the women out of their heads as they climbed to the ground floor of the old stone house. They slipped along dark hallways. Candles were lit here and there and stuck on wall sconces, but the flickering light they cast was soon swallowed up by shadows. Jason found a window and peered out. The sky was gray now. It wouldn't be long until dawn. He tried an unlocked door and felt his pulse quicken as he peered into a room that had quite a few crates and kegs stacked around it. Those kegs might hold food or other supplies, but as he picked one up, he saw that it was full of gunpowder, at least according to the markings on it.
Somebody's coming.
Jason pushed the door nearly all the way closed, leaving it ajar only a tiny crack. The group included several men.
The Chinaman shall be here soon, eh, Jefe?
That would be Juan Alba, Jason thought. If Alba was down here, that meant he wasn't up in his tower room any longer.
Grab a couple of those kegs of powder. We're going up into the tower.
Jason eased the door open, saw that the corridor was empty, and motioned for Matt to follow him. Each of them carried two kegs of powder as they retraced their steps back toward the staircase that ran between the tower and the basement corridor where the cells were located. They started climbing, being as quiet about it as they could, in case someone was up in Alba's room at the top of the tower. But the big room was unoccupied when they reached it. Large windows commanded a great view on all four sides of the tower. They could see far out into the gulf, as well as down to the stable and the courtyard in front of the house. Jason saw something else, too. At the top of the grassy slope leading to the sand dunes, something red fluttered in the dawn wind. Wash's bandana, Jason thought. He pointed it out to Matt.
That means the posse's ready to attack. All they're waiting for is our signal.
I reckon this here gunpowder is it.
That's right.
Jason raised the window overlooking the courtyard, while Matt tore strips off the sheet on Alba's opulent bed and twisted them together to make a fuse. Jason used his knife to gouge a small hole in the top of one of the kegs. When Matt forced the strip of twisted cloth through the hole, it made a crude fuse. An oil lamp was burning on the table next to the bed, its flame turned low. Matt carried the keg over to it and looked at Jason.
Ready?
Jason nodded. Matt held the end of the fuse in the flame until it was burning. When Matt tossed it, Jason caught the keg, turned, and threw it out the window. The keg sailed high over the courtyard, arching through the air. It hit the ground, bounced a couple of times, and rolled to a stop against the gate. It was a perfect landing, exactly how Jason wanted it. Except for one thing. The fuse had gone out before it reached the powder.
Damn it! What do we do now?
Jason spotted movement in the courtyard below. One of the bandits, a Mexican in a big sombrero, was walking toward the gate. The man must have seen the keg fall and wanted to find out what was going on. Jason jerked his pistol from its holster.
We'll have to set it off this way.
Beside him, Matt got the idea and yanked his own gun out. Both of them aimed at the keg. The heavy gates were blown outward and ripped off their hinges, and the force of the blast picked up the bandit and flung him ahead like a rag doll. His sombrero flew in the air and his arms and legs flailed helplessly for a second before his corpse slammed into the wall of the house. Jason and Matt looked toward the sand dunes and saw the members of the posse gallop into view, racing toward the house. Outlaws poured out of the stronghold, gathering in the courtyard in response to the explosion.
Throw another keg down there!
Matt grabbed one of the powder kegs and heaved it out the window. Jason tracked it with his gun. The second keg exploded in the middle of the startled outlaws. Several of them were blown to pieces by the blast. Others were cut down by the deadly spray of splinters from the wooden keg. Most of the men who weren't killed outright by the explosion were knocked off their feet. Jason saw Wash, Dixon, Zachary Morton, and the other members of the posse as they charged through the blasted gates into the courtyard, firing all around them as they galloped in. Most of the outlaws who were caught in the open were still too stunned from the explosion to put up much of a fight. The men from Fury cut them down. Bullets scythed through the ranks of the bandits. Some of the gang were still in the house, and they opened fire on the posse. Jason saw a couple of the men topple from their saddles. The others leapt off their horses and hunted cover. Within moments, a pitched battle had developed, the posse men laying siege to the old house, and the remaining outlaws defending it.
Look!
Matt pointed out the big window on the other side of the room, toward the gulf. Jason turned and saw the ship sweeping over the waves toward the shore. It had to be the vessel belonging to the Chinese warlords. Jason didn't know much about sailing, but he estimated that it wouldn't be long before the ship reached the stronghold. There had to be a dock of some sort at the base of the cliff, with stairs leading up from it. If the warlords and their men charged up the stairs and entered the fight on Alba's side, that would swing the odds and put the members of the posse in even greater danger than they already were.
Gotta end this fight in a hurry. Grab those kegs and come on.
Mac picked up the kegs and followed Jason down the staircase. They met four of the outlaws charging up the stairs.
Fury, get down!
Jason dropped. Matt heaved one of the kegs. All four of the bandits went tumbling down the stairs. Jason and Matt fired into them. They leapt over the sprawled bloody bodies of the outlaws, all of whom were dead, and continued down the stairs. Jason picked up the keg Matt had thrown and carried it with him. When they reached the ground floor, they followed the sound of shooting to a large chamber where the outlaws were using windows and rifle slits to fire at the members of the posse. Just around a corner, Jason and Matt paused to reload, then exchanged grim nods. They leapt out and rolled the powder kegs across the room toward the outlaws. Then they fired. The two young men from Fury jumped back just in time. When they looked around the corner again, clouds of smoke and dust blinded them. Gradually, the dust settled, and then they could tell that the double explosion had cleared the room of defenders. The bodies of the outlaws littered the floor, some whole, some in pieces, but all bloody and motionless. The battle was over.
Go tell Wash and the others to gather their horses and get ready to ride. I'll get the women.
Matt nodded and ran through the devastation toward the door that led out into the courtyard. Jason went the other way, toward the staircase that would take him down to the cells. When he reached it, the staircase was empty, so Jason hurried on down to the corridor where the cells were located.
Megan, Jenny, it's me! Hold your fire! It's all right. I'm alone. The fighting is over. Most of Alba's men are dead. We need to get out of here, though, because that Chinese ship is offshore.
He had reached the cell as he spoke, and now took hold of the door to open it. It was jerked inward, pulling him with it. Jason's gun was gone. It had slipped out of his fingers. A giant shadow loomed over him, and he looked up into the fierce, bearded face of one Alba, the scourge of the borderlands himself.
Oh, hell!
So, you think you have won, Gringo? You think you have defeated Juan Alba, but you are wrong.
Jason looked around and saw the four women huddled against one wall of the cell. The shotguns and pistols were on the other side of the room, where Alba must have thrown them after he had disarmed the women.
I'm sorry, Jason. We tried to stop him, but he's a monster.
Too strong to be brought down by women. Strong like the bull.
Jason noticed for the first time that there was blood on Alba's shirt under his fancy jacket. At least one of the women had gotten a bullet in him. The wound hadn't been enough to bring him down, but it might weaken him.
He had Jenny by the neck. He said he would snap it if we tried to warn you.
Suddenly, Abel lashed out, aiming to kick Jason in the ribs. Jason twisted and rolled out of the way and scrambled to his feet.
Now I will kill you. No matter what happens to me, you will die, Gringo. And these women with you, before I will let them go. You can go to your death knowing that your mission was a failure.
What do you plan to do? Talk me to death?
Alba's grin disappeared, and he charged. Jason got out of the way, clubbed his fists together, and hit Alba in the back of his head. Alba didn't even seem to notice. Alba's backhand blow propelled Jason into the wall. Megan darted forward toward the weapons on the other side of the room. Alba spotted her and swatted her like a mosquito. She went spinning off her feet.
Megan!
Jason slammed her right and a left into Alba's head. Alba barely reacted. Alba's left fist crashed against Jason's breastbone, numbing him. Then Alba swung again. Jason ducked, but the blow hit his right shoulder, which was enough to make that arm go numb and limp. As Alba charged again, Jason stumbled out of the way and kicked one of the revolvers toward the women. Jenny reached the gun first, scooping it up just as Alba rushed Jason again. Under the pressure of Alba's arms, Jason felt his ribs creaking. They would snap at any moment. Jason felt Alba's body shuddering under the impact of the slugs. The giant staggered to one side, but his grip on Jason didn't loosen.
Before one Alba dies, he will crush your bones to dust, Gringo!
Jason, duck!
Abigail shoved the barrels of a shotgun against the back of Alba's skull. Alba's arms didn't let go until his headless body hit the floor. Jason writhed loose and crawled away from the gruesome corpse. He grabbed Megan and lifted her, pulling her against him.
Megan! Megan!
Jason?
It's over. Oh, it's over.
Jason glanced up, wondering what was going to happen now.
Everybody all right in here? Whew! Everybody but that big bastard, that is.
Filled with relief, Jason struggled to his feet, lifting Megan as he did so.
We're fine. We gotta get out of here.
Yeah, Matt told me there's some Chinese fellas coming that we don't want to meet. Come on, we got the horses ready to ride.
With the strong hands of the posse men steadying them, Jason and the four women stumbled out of the cell, and within minutes they reached the courtyard, where most of the men from Fury were already mounted. The women were helped onto the extra horses, and they all galloped out of the courtyard toward the sandhills before the ship made landfall. They made it through the dunes by midday. Jason and Wash paused their horses at the top of a high dune near the edge of the sandhills and looked back toward the gulf, waiting there as the others rode past, searching for any sign of pursuit. They didn't spot any movement. Riders would be easy to see against the sweep of sand, which was bright in the midday sun.
Reckon when them Chinamen found everybody dead, they got back on their boat and sailed away.
That was my hope, anyway. Of course, we couldn't be sure that all the outlaws were dead. Got out of there too fast to check all the bodies. Some of them could have been hiding out in that old heap of a house, too.
Couldn't have been more than a handful, if that many. And with Alba dead, they ain't gonna give chase, Jason. They'll just slink off somewheres else like a mangy coyotes they are.
You're right. Let's catch up with the others.
One member of the posse had been killed in the fighting. His body was draped over his saddle and tied into place. Jason didn't even know the man's name. He'd been a newcomer to the settlement. Several others were wounded, including Saul Cohen and Alf Blodgett. None of the injuries were serious, though. They'd been cleaned and patched up. The wounds would need medical attention from Dr. Morelli when the posse got back to Fury, but they could wait that long without doing any more harm. They paused to give the horses a short rest soon after leaving the dunes. Slogging through that sand had been hard on the animals. Saddles were removed from the horses that seemed to be in the worst shape and placed on some of the spare mounts. There were fewer of them now that the prisoners had been rescued, but that was a good thing. Jason sought out Saul Cohen and Salmon Kendall.
Did you run into a cavalry patrol before you crossed the border?
No, but Wash told us about how that green lieutenant tried to stop you. I'm glad we didn't meet up with him. It would have gone against the grain for me to defy the army, but I wouldn't have let those troopers stop us either.
Nor would I. Imagine, representatives of our own government taking the side of a foreign country over the interests of American citizens.
It's a disgrace, that's what it is. If it ever gets to where it's that way all the time, I tell you this country won't be a fit place to live.
Jason didn't think they'd have to worry about that. Americans in general had more common sense than that, even the politicians. He hoped that was the case anyway. Putting such things out of his mind, he went over to Megan and took her hand.
How are you doing?
Not too bad, I guess. My head doesn't hurt anymore from that clout Alba gave me. It was terrible seeing what Jenny and Abigail did to him, but at the same time, I can't feel too sorry for him, knowing what he planned to do to us.
We'll be home in a day or two. I'm looking forward to it.
So am I.
When the horses had had a chance to rest for a short time, the group pushed on again. They stopped several more times during that day, then took a longer rest that evening as they waited for the moon to rise. Even though everyone was exhausted, they were anxious to get back to the settlement and see their families. No one wanted to stop and camp for the whole night, so as soon as the moon came up and they could see where they were going, they resumed their northward trek. Jason and Wash kept an eye on their back trail the entire time, but never saw any signs of pursuit. By the middle of the next afternoon, they were across the border, back in Arizona territory.
Looks like no one's following us.
You know that we were awfully lucky, don't you?
Can't help but know that. But my father taught me to take my luck wherever I could find it.
A wise man, Jedediah Fury.
Jason was about to nod in agreement when he saw Wash spring back toward him and Saul at a gallop. The old-timer waved for everyone else to stop as he passed them.
Now what?
I hate to tell you this, Jason, but there's some sort of ruckus going on ahead of us. I heard gunshots a minute ago.
Can we go around it?
Well, I reckon we might, but then there might be trouble right behind us, and we wouldn't know what it was.
You saying we should go take a look?
It'd be a smart thing to do.
Jason knew the old-timer was right. For a while there, peace had been wonderful. But the sound of distant gunfire that now drifted to his ears through the hot, still air told him what he already knew. The only peace that lasted came after a man was dead. The stubby red butte stuck up from the arid landscape about a quarter of a mile from the little rise where Jason and Wash were stretched out on their bellies, studying the situation. They had passed Wash's spyglass back and forth several times, and there was no getting around what they saw through it. A group of cavalrymen were holed up in some rocks at the base of the butte. Arrayed in front of them, taking advantage of every bit of cover, no matter how small, was a band of Apache warriors. The Apaches had rifles they had probably looted in previous raids, and they kept the soldiers pinned down in the rocks. From their vantage point, Jason and Wash had seen a couple of the troopers lying motionless on the ground behind the rocks, and they figured that those men were either badly wounded or dead.
You think that's Lieutenant Carter's patrol?
More than likely. He found his Apaches, but I'm betting that right now he wishes he hadn't. If he's still alive, that is.
What do you think the chances are that they can hold off the Indians?
Considering that they likely ain't got no water, except what's in their canteens, and they'll be running out of ammunition sooner or later, their chances ain't good. And Apache can outlast pert near anybody. Them Indians squat out there till doomsday, content just to pick off a trooper every now and then, whenever one of them gets careless.
When they've been without water long enough, they'll go mad and try to break out.
Yep, that's what them Apaches are counting on.
Speaking of counting, how many of the Indians are there?
Hard to say. They slide around from bush to bush and rock to rock looking for a better angle to shoot at the troopers. My guess is about 25.
So we outnumber them.
25 Apaches ain't like 25 normal Jaspers. I wouldn't feel confident going against them unless I had 90 or 100 men.
We can't just ride around them and leave those soldiers to be slaughtered.
I was afraid you'd say that. And you're right, of course. Anyway, they might spot us. And when they was through with them soldier boys, they'd come after us. Best to deal with them now, when they ain't expecting it.
Let's go tell the others and figure out what to do.
When they got back to the posse, which was waiting a few hundred yards away, it didn't take long for Jason to explain the situation.
We've got to help those cavalrymen.
Them Bluebell has got themselves into this fix. Let them get their own selves out of it.
They would come to our aid if we were the ones who were trapped. I vote we help them.
We're putting it to a vote, are we? Well, in that case, I vote that we help them too.
Nobody said anything about voting. I'm still in charge of this posse, and I say we help the soldiers. If you don't like that, Dixon, you're free to ride on by yourself. But don't look to us for help if the Apaches start stalking you.
Never said I wouldn't go along with it. I just figured it's a piss-poor idea, that's all.
How do you think we should do this?
Well, we can ride up on them from behind and go to shooting, but they're gonna hear us coming. We'll get some of them, but they're liable to scatter, and some of those bucks will get away. They'll go back to the camp and get some more warriors, and then dog our trail all the way back to Fury.
Yes, and they'll pick off some of us if that happens, too. We need to make sure none of them get away. I've got an idea about that.
Sweat trickled down the back of Jason's neck as he climbed. His hands wrapped around jutting little projections of rock, and the toes of his boots wedged into small openings in the rock face. The sun's heat blasted down on the butte. Four men had accompanied him on this mission, circling far around the butte so that the dust from the horses' hooves wouldn't give them away as they approached from the north. They had tied their mounts to scrubby mesquite trees, slung their rifles on their backs by makeshift slings fashioned from lengths of rope, and started to climb. The rugged face of the butte provided enough handholds and toeholds to allow the men to make the ascent, but it was hot, hard, grueling work. Once they reached the top, though, they would have a commanding field of fire. They would start picking off the Apaches as the rest of the posse attacked from the rear and flushed the Indians out of their hiding places. It was up to Jason and his companions to make sure that none of the Apaches escaped. Jason glanced over at the other men. He had picked what he hoped were the best marksmen among the group, but he had only their word for that in some cases, since he didn't know all of the men. He was confident in his own abilities and those of Wash Keough, but the others were unknown quantities. One of the volunteers, surprisingly, was Alf Blodgett. The burly, middle-aged Englishman had explained that before becoming a saloon keeper, he had been in the British Army in India. After what seemed like an eternity, five men pulled themselves onto the flat top of the butte.
You going to be all right, Alf?
It was on that day in a Carver Pass when all lads took on a group of rogue Sikhs.
All right, stay low while we're crawling over to the other side.
The butte was only a couple of hundred yards wide, but that seemed like a long way to the men who were crawling over it. Tufts of grass grew here and there, as did a few small bushes, but for the most part, the top of the butte was flat, rocky, and arid. The sounds of gunfire continued from the rocks below, but it seemed to Jason that the shots were fewer and farther between now. He wondered if the troopers were already running low on ammunition. It probably wouldn't matter to the Apaches if they did. The savages would continue to play their cruel waiting game. Jason, Wash, Blodgett, and the other two men didn't unsling their rifles until they were almost at the butte's brink. When they had the weapons ready, they eased forward, being careful not to let the barrels protrude too far over the edge. They didn't want the Apaches to notice that they were up there until they were ready to fire.
Pick your targets and make your shots count. We'll only get one chance to take them by surprise.
From up there, Jason could see several Apaches lying in shallow depressions they had scooped out of the sandy soil. Others crouched behind rocks or bushes, making themselves smaller than seemed humanly possible. Jason picked a fairly difficult target for himself. He could see about half of the Apache's head behind a rock. A strip of red cloth bound the warrior's raven-black hair. Jason drew a bead on that tiny bit of bright color.
Let him have it.
The weapon kicked against Jason's shoulder. As he worked its lever, he saw the Apache he had aimed at thrown backward by the bullet. The warrior landed on his back with arms and legs flung out and didn't move again. Along the rim of the butte, more shots rang out. Those shots were the signal for the posse to charge into the battle from the rear, led by Saul, Salmon, and Matt. The four women would still be far in the rear, guarded by several of the wounded men who were left behind for that purpose. Jason fired again and saw an Apache's arm jerk and then dangle uselessly, probably broken by the bullet. At that moment, the posse came galloping into view. Jason scooted forward until he could look down into the rocks at the cavalrymen who had been trapped there. He didn't want those troopers blazing away at the Apaches, because any of their shots that missed might pose a danger to the men from Fury who were attacking from the rear.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire!
Jason spotted the wiry little sergeant kneeling behind a boulder. The lieutenant was sitting beside him with his back propped against the rock. A blood-stained bandage was wrapped around the young officer's shoulder. Sergeant Halligan twisted around and craned his neck to look up at the top of the butte. Jason snatched his hat off and waved it in the air so that the sergeant could see it and know that they were white men up there, not Indians. Halligan grinned and waved back at Jason.
Hold your fire, men!
Jason resumed firing. The Apaches were scattering now, just as he had figured they would. The posse men rode some of them down and blasted others with rifles and handguns. Jason and his sharpshooters picked off others. The fight didn't last long. Within minutes, all the Apaches were down. All but a couple of them were lying motionless, either already dead or mortally wounded. The two who weren't hurt that bad were taken prisoner. Jason was glad to see that. He had issued firm orders before leaving the posse that none of the Indians were to be murdered if they were out of the fight. But he hadn't been sure the men would cooperate and follow those orders.
Oh, blimey, now we gotta climb back down to bleeding hill. Still, wasn't a bad fight while it lasted. A bit unfair, perhaps.
What's unfair is not doing everything you can to survive a fight.
And a mite foolish to boot.
By the time Jason and the others descended from their aerie, the troopers had emerged from the rocks, and the women and their guards had come up. As the posse members and the cavalry patrol gathered at the base of the butte, Sergeant Halligan helped Lieutenant Carter forward. The wounded lieutenant looked around at Jason and the other men from Fury, and then his gaze lingered on the four women.
You men are all under arrest.
What the hell are you talking about, Lieutenant?
I know I owe you a debt of thanks for coming to our aid, but I can't ignore the presence of those women. Obviously, you men ignored my orders and entered Mexican territory without permission. You invaded a sovereign nation.
Invasion, hell. Alba and his bandits invaded Arizona territory first. If you're a big enough fool to try to arrest us, you can do it after we've taken those ladies back to Fury.
Lieutenant, with all due respect, sir, you might want to think about what you're doing. We lost a couple of men, but I reckon we'd all be dead if it wasn't for these folks. They saved our bacon, and that's the God's honest truth.
But they broke the law and disobeyed a direct order.
Begging your pardon, Lieutenant, but were you such a horse's ass before they pinned them bars on you, or did you get that way afterwards?
Of all the damned insubordination! I'll have you busted all the way down to private. You won't see the outside of the guardhouse for months, Sergeant.
Good. Maybe I'll get some sleep in there.
Now see here.
No, you see. You got the makings of a fine officer, Lieutenant. Ain't nobody doubts your courage, and you're smart as a whip most of the time. But this ain't one of those times. You tell a bunch of Americans they ain't got the right to protect them and their own, and of course they're going to ignore you. You tell them they got to sit back and let bad men run roughshod over them because of some rule or regulation some stuffed shirt back east come up with, and they're going to tell you to go to hell. They don't care about the law near as much as they care about doing what's right. And if they weren't that way, well, I reckon they'd have rode off today and left us here to die instead of risking their own lives to help us. You get all that through your head and you might be more than a good officer someday, Lieutenant. You might be a good man, too. That's the longest piece of speechifying I ever spouted in all my born days. I'm done.
You have my apologies, Marshal. And you and your companions have my gratitude as well. If there's anything I can do to repay you for your assistance...
There's one thing. Ride with us back to Fury. It's on your way to Camp Grant anyway, and we've got a good doctor there who can tend to your wounded.
All right. Thank you, Marshal.
Mount up, men. We're going home.
It was the middle of the next day when the large group of riders came in sight of the settlement. Jason felt a wave of relief wash through him at the sight of Fury. They had made it the rest of the way without any trouble. Now all they had to do was ride in, and they would be home.
It looks good, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Jason grew puzzled, though, when no one came riding out from town to meet them. He figured someone would have spotted them coming by now. And he thought Ward Wanamaker, or Dr. Morelli at least, would want to know as soon as possible if their mission had been successful. If he didn't know better, though, he would almost think the settlement was deserted. As they drew closer, he didn't see anyone moving around the streets.
Does it seem to you like the town is awfully quiet?
It does.
Do you think anything is wrong?
Wash, Saul, and Salmon trotted their mounts up alongside Jason's.
Something's wrong. Where is everybody?
We were just wondering the same thing. Wash, you and I better ride ahead and take a closer look.
I'm coming too.
And me? I'm the mayor of Fury, gosh darn it. If something bad's happened, I should have been there.
You had your hands full helping to rescue those prisoners. And if there's any danger in town, I want you and Saul out here to help handle these folks, Salmon. Don't let them go charging in, no matter what you see or hear.
What could it be? Where's everyone gone?
We'll find out. Come on, Wash.
I noticed you didn't ask me if I wanted to come with you, Jason.
I figured you would. You've never been one to avoid trouble, Wash. You usually gallop right into it. But you can go back to the others if you want.
Hell no! And miss all the fun? Just ask me next time, all right?
Sure.
They were close enough to town now to see that a couple of wagons were parked in front of the mercantile, and several horses were tied at the hitch racks. So Fury wasn't completely deserted after all, but no one was moving around, that was for sure. Jason hadn't seen a soul on the street so far. They reached the edge of town and started riding slowly along Main Street. An eerie silence hung over the settlement.
Oh, now I really don't like...
Jason, go back! Get out of town! Go!
Ward Wanamaker jerked, stumbled, and went down. Jason and Wash went for their guns, but before they could draw the weapons, the barrels of numerous rifles and pistols appeared in open windows and thrust over the tops of roofs.
Hold it, Marshal.
Looks like they've got the drop on us, Wash, whoever they are.
Yeah.
The old-timer lifted his hand away from his gun, and so did Jason. A couple of men sauntered through the bat wings of the Crown and Garter. Jason stiffened as he recognized them as Bill Rye and Flint Gallister. The gunslingers who led the opposing factions of hired guns working for Matt McDonald and Ezra Dixon. At least they had been opposing factions when the posse left Fury. Now Rye and Gallister looked downright friendly with each other as they strolled toward Jason and Wash.
Marshal, might as well get down from your horse and make yourself comfortable. You're not going anywhere.
What's going on here? Where is everybody?
Oh, don't worry. They're around.
They're just lying low for now, until they see whether or not you and the rest of that posse are gonna act sensibly.
What the hell are you talking about, Gallister?
That's Marshal Gallister. This is Mayor Ryan. We're running this town now.
Lord have mercy! You coyotes decided to get together and take over.
Insulting the public official. Got to be a hefty fine for that, doesn't there, Mayor?
That's right. We'll figure it out later, though. For right now, you old buzzard, you just ride out there and tell the rest of your bunch what's happening. If they want their former marshal to live...
And if they want to keep their own families from coming to any harm...
They'll ride in and turn over their guns to us.
Just like that. You take over a whole town, just like that?
Just like that, Fury. Flint and I decided there was more money to be made this way than by working for those two stupid feudin' ranchers. Don't worry, you'll get your town back. Eventually.
Jason looked past Ryan Gallister and saw that Ward Wanamaker had pulled himself to a sitting position. He was now scooting toward the hardware store, dragging a bullet-ventilated leg behind him. At least Ward hadn't been killed. That was something to be thankful for.
You're insane, both of you. There are only about 20 of you. You can't take over a whole town.
That's where you're wrong, Fury. It don't matter how many people are in this settlement. They're no match for men like us. They're sheep. They're too afraid for their lives to fight back. Hell, they're afraid of being made uncomfortable. They'd rather give in and let us have whatever we want.
That's right. Before you start thinking about fighting for them, Fury, you'd better consider this. They ain't worth it.
Just throw your gun in the dirt, Fury. There's no shame in being a sheep when all the other folks in your town are.
Wash, ride back out to the posse. Tell them what's going on, and tell them I said to come in with all guns blazing.
What the hell's wrong with you, Fury?
What makes you think we'll let this old buzzard go anywhere?
Because I'm about to kill the both of you.
Jason's first shot hit Flint Gallister in the chest, knocking him off his feet. Gallister's shot had missed. Jason fired a second shot at Rye, but Rye shot before that and didn't miss. The impact of the bullet made Jason slew sideways in the saddle. He felt himself sliding out of the saddle and couldn't do anything about it. He crashed to the street beside his horse, which was spooked and danced around for a second before bolting, luckily missing Jason with its iron-shod hooves. Jason saw Bill Rye lying a few feet away, eyes wide open. Rye's gun had slipped from his fingers. A black-rimmed hole just above Rye's left eye showed where Jason's second bullet had gone. He was as dead as Callister. But the other gunslingers who had thought they could waltz in here and take over the town were still alive, and they began firing from windows and rooftops as Ward Wanamaker pushed himself to his feet and staggered over to Jason. Jason was aware of Ward grabbing him under the arms and dragging him toward the mouth of a nearby alley. Ward was hit again, but he stayed on his feet and kept moving until he reached the alley. When Jason looked around, he saw fights spilling into the street as the citizens of Fury attacked the wolf pack with fists, clubs, pitchforks, shovels, anything they could lay their hands on. The people were fighting back. Some of them might die, but they would take back their town. Ward slumped to the ground next to Jason and pulled the marshal's shirt aside.
Lord, you're hit bad, Jason.
Jason didn't care. There was a smile on his face as he heard the sounds of the struggle around him. And it widened into a grin as pounding hoofbeats and a fresh volley of gunshots told him that the other members of the posse had arrived to finish cleaning up the town. The people of Fury would finish the job, no matter what happened to him. Confident in that belief, he let the onrushing tide of blackness that swept toward him claim him and carry him away. Jason didn't expect to wake up, but he did. He became aware of a tight pressure around his chest and a warmth clutching his hand. When he forced his eyes open and looked down at himself as he lay in a bed somewhere, he saw that the tightness came from the bandages wrapped around him. The warmth came from Megan McDonald's hand. Her fingers were intertwined with his, holding on as if she never intended to let go. She wasn't looking at him, though. Her head was down and her eyes were closed, and her lips were moving as if she were praying. Jason hated to interrupt her, but he wanted to talk to her.
Megan?
Jason! Jason, you've come back to me.
And no, I'm not gone anywhere.
But if that was true, he suddenly thought, then why did he remember talking to his father again? Why did he remember, plain as day, Jedediah Fury telling him that his work wasn't done yet, that he needed to get back to the settlement? Jason couldn't answer those questions, and he didn't have the strength to worry about them. It was enough to know that he was here, and that Megan was with him, and that evidently life went on in a town called Fury. All the gunslingers were dead, and so were half a dozen of the townspeople. It was a high price to pay. A high price in blood and loss and sacrifice. But from time to time, that was what life demanded of those who dared to live it. Within a month, all the buildings destroyed by one Alba's bandit horde had been rebuilt. Flowers had begun to bloom on the fresh graves in the newly established town cemetery. Marshal Jason Fury and Deputy Ward Wanamaker were both back on their feet, although they were still getting around a mite gingerly. Wash Keogh had stayed sober and acted as the town marshal while both lawmen were laid up, assisted by several volunteer deputies, including Alf Blodgett and Saul Cohen. Wash had proclaimed that month of sobriety to be the worst month of his life and warned Jason that he'd better find somebody else to take over before he got himself shot up again. An uneasy state of truce existed between Matt McDonald and Ezra Dixon. They still didn't like each other, not even a little bit, but working together on the posse had forced them to develop a grudging respect for each other. Jason was convinced that sooner or later things would flare up between them again. They were both too stubborn and prideful for it not to, but he hoped that any trouble would take its time about getting here. Anyway, Matt had enough to worry about at the moment, what with a wedding date he had set with Jenny rapidly approaching. A laboriously scrawled letter arrived from Sergeant Halligan. After helping the posse clean up the last of the gunslingers who had terrorized the settlement, Lieutenant Carter and the patrol had returned to Camp Grant. According to Halligan's letter, the lieutenant's official report of his last patrol contained no mention of any civilian force making an incursion into Mexican territory. Jason was sitting in a straight-backed chair in front of the marshal's office, leaning back against the wall, when Dr. Morelli strolled up, accompanied by Wash, Saul, and Salmon.
Is this a committee of some sort?
No, we just all happened to be coming the same way. I'm here to check on that wound.
It's fine. Time for you to quit fussing over me, Doc.
Yeah, he's got Megan McDonald to do that. Say, Jason, I'll bet if you got busy,
You could talk that girl into marrying you in time for you to have a double wedding with her brother and your sister.
Oh, don't remind me. Don't go messing in things that are none of your business, Mayor.
Well, I'm on my way down to Abigail's for a drink. Now, don't let on that I told you, but I think that gal's getting a mite sweet on me, even if I am old enough to be her pappy. Of course, she'd throw me over in a minute if she could have you, Marshal.
More people moving in. Looks like new settlers aren't going to be scared off by what happened here. The raid by Alba and the trouble with those gunslingers, I mean.
No need for folks to be scared. Alba's dead, his gang's wiped out, and we all saw what happened when those gunnies tried to take over. Our marshal put a stop to that. Slapped leather against both Bill Rye and Flint Gallister, Jason did, and killed them both. Hell, our marshal's the most famous gunfighter in the territory now. Nobody's ever going to try to cause trouble in these parts again.
Jason looked out into the street and smiled. He wished he could believe that. He really did. Town Called Fury, Hard Country, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Danny Gavigan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Stephen Carpenter, James Konacek, Terrence Aselford, Casey Platt, Jeff Allen, Dylan Lynch, Andy Clemens, Christopher Graybill, Gary Tells, Sherry Simpson, Sonny Lasky, Annette Savard, Thomas Penny, Scott McCormick, Eric Messner, Ren Casey, Mort Shelby, Johan Detweiler, Ken Jackson, Christopher Sheeran, and MB Van Dorn. Directed by Annette Savard. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Lauren Driller. Additional original music by Johan Detweiler and Brian Patton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornette. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. If you enjoyed A Town Called Fury, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man, The First Mountain Man, and Sidewinders. Available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio titles.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Do you know what they're calling one of their leaders?
Who, God Voice?
The Togairu Rebels. One band of raiders has named their leader Ashwarawu. Do you know what that means? He who kills without mercy.
Our enemy is a Roo called Ashwarawu.
A mighty leader?
A coward who strikes at the vulnerable and retreats to the shadows. But of late, he grows bolder, and his attacks come nearer and nearer to Daryan.
I will line the steps with the heads of Chazole dog warriors.
You cannot fight a war alone. You have heard of Ashwarawu?
Ashwarawu gathers warriors as he roams from village to village. The baronies fear him.
We know where he is. Or we know at least where you can go to be found.
Ashwarawu.
You are far from any village, woman.
I am where I'm meant to be.
Who are you, and why have you come?
I am Bryn Dariel. I have no home, and I was a wanderer until very recently when I happened upon a village controlled by a despised Yatol. I killed the Yatol and his Chezo Le Laki beside him. And so again, I have no home.
Then you are welcome as one of my warriors.
How did you find us?
Perhaps you are not as well hidden as you believe.
How he found us is not as important as why he found us. What do the Shistatu see in our struggles that would so interest you, Mystic?
I have come to Togai to learn.
What is there to learn, Mystic? How to fight? How to die?
Perhaps how to live.
Kill the rats! Kill all of them!
Don't miss the cataclysmic action in Part 2 of the Demon Wars Saga Book 6, Transcendence. Available now in graphic audio.
I am Sakage, a Lord of Shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. All the pieces will be put into play. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. A new darkness will rise. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. I will do justice and love mercy. The final battle will threaten all the world. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down. And only Kyler can stand in the way of the Krull.
There's no way to win except to raise these monsters. It will be an orgy of death.
Then let us raise monsters.
The end is nigh. Find out where all the pieces fall in Beyond the Shadows, Parts 1 and 2. Available in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.